An excerpt from Eight Lamentations, Spear of Shadows, by Josh Reynolds, read by John Banks. Somewhere in the mortal realms, the smith raised his hammer. He brought it down, striking the white-hot length of metal he held pinned against the anvil with one fire-blackened hand. He rotated it and delivered a second strike, a third, a fourth, until the smoky air of the cavernous forge resonated with the sound of raw creation. It was the first smithy, long forgotten save in the dreams of those who worked with iron and flame. It was a place of stone and wood and steel, at once a grand temple and a brute cave, its dimensions and shape changing with every twitch of the smoke that inundated it. It was nowhere and everywhere, existing only in the hollows of ancestral memory, or in the stories of the oldest mortal smiths. Racks of weapons, such as had never been wielded by mortals, gleamed in the light of the forge, their killing edges honed and impatient to perform their function. Beneath them were less murderous tools, though no less necessary. The smith made little distinction between them. Weapons were tools, and tools were weapons. War was no less a labour than ploughing the soil, and hewing down a forest was no less a slaughter, though the victims could not, save in rare instances, scream. The smith was impossibly broad and powerful. For all that, his shape was crooked and bent strangely, as if succumbing to unseen pressures. His thick limbs moved with a surety of purpose that no mechanism could replicate. He wore a pair of oft-patched trousers and a battered apron, his bare arms and back glistening with sweat, where it wasn't stained with tattoo-like walls of soot or marked with runic scars. Boots of crimson dragonhide protected his feet, the iridescent scales glinting in the firelight, and tools of all shapes and sizes hung from the wide leather belt strapped about his waist. A spade-shaped beard, composed of swirling ash and mustaches of flowing smoke, covered the lower half of his lumpen features. A thick mane of fiery hair cascaded down his scalp, spilling over his shoulders and crackling against his flesh. Eyes like molten metal were fixed on his task, with a calm that came only with age. The smith was older than the realms, a breaker of stars and a maker of suns. He had forged weapons without number, and no two were the same, a fact he took no small amount of pride in. He was a craftsman, and he put a bit of himself into the metal, even as he hammered it into shape. This one needed a little more hammering than most. He raised it from the anvil and studied it.
"Bit more heat," he murmured.
His voice, at its quietest, was like the rumble of an avalanche. He shoved the length of smouldering iron into the maw of the forge. Flames crawled up his sinewy arm, and the metal twisted in his grip as it grew hot once more. But he did not flinch. The fire held no terrors for one such as him. Tongs and gloves were for lesser smiths. Besides, there was much to be seen in the fire, if you weren't afraid of getting close. He peered into the dancing hues of red and orange, wondering what they would show him this time. Shapes began to take form, indistinct and uncertain. He stirred the embers. As the flames roared up anew, clawing greedily at the metal, he felt his students shy back. He chuckled.
"What sort of smiths are afraid of a bit of fire?"
He glanced at them, head tilted. Vague dream shapes huddled in the smoke, small and large, broad and gossamer thin. Hundreds of them, Duardin, human, elf, even a few ogres, crowded the ever-shifting confines of the smithy, watching as he plied his trade. All who sought to shape metal were welcome in this forge, barring an obvious few. There were always some who made themselves unwelcome, those who'd failed to learn the most important lessons, and used what he taught them for bitter ends. Not many, thankfully, but some. They hid from his gaze, even as they sought to emulate his skill. But he would find them, eventually, and cast their works into the fire. The voices of his students rose in sudden warning. The smith turned, eyes narrowing in consternation. Talons of fire emerged from the forge, gripping either side of the hearth. Bestial features, composed of crackling flame and swirling ash, congealed. Teeth made from cinders gnashed in a paroxysm of fury. A molten claw caught at his arm, and his thick hide blackened at its touch. The smith grunted and jerked his arm back. The demon lunged after him with a hot roar, its shape expanding as if to fill the smithy. Great wings of ash stretched, and a horned head emerged from within the hearth.
"No,"
the smith said, simply, as his students scattered. He dropped the metal he'd been heating and caught the twisting flame shape before it could grow any larger. He had to be quick. It shrieked as he dragged it around and slammed it down onto the anvil. Burning claws gouged his bare arms and tore his apron to ribbons as flapping wings battered against his shoulders, but the smith's grip was unbreakable. He raised his hammer. The intruder's eyes widened in realization. It warbled a protest. The hammer rang down, then again and again, flattening and shaping the flame into a more agreeable form. The demon screamed in protest as its essence was reduced with every blow. All of its arrogance and malice fled, leaving behind only fear, and soon not even that. The smith lifted what was left of the weakly struggling demon. He recognized the signature on its soul bindings as easily as if he'd carved them himself. Demons were like any other raw material, in that they required careful shaping by their summoner to make them fit for purpose. This one had been made for strength and speed, and not much else.
"Crude. Always so crude," he said. "No pride in his work, that one. No artistry. I tried to teach him, but... ah, well. We'll make something of you, though, never fear. I've made better from worse materials in my time."
So saying, he plunged the demon into the slack tub beside the anvil. Water hissed into vapor as parts of the creature sloughed away into motes of cinder, swirling upwards to float above the anvil. What was left in the tub was only a bit of blackened iron, pitted and veined an angry crimson, the barest hint of a snarling face scraped into its surface. The smith bounced it on his palm until it cooled, and then dropped it into the pocket of his apron.
"Now, I wonder what that was all about."
It had been some time since he had been attacked in this place, in such a way. That it had happened at all spoke of desperation on someone's part, as if they'd hoped to prevent him from seeing something. He looked up at the cloud of floating cinders and reached to grasp a handful. He set aside his hammer and ran a thick finger through them, reading them as a mortal might read a book. With a grunt, he cast them back into the forge and gave the coals a stir with his hand. An indistinct image took shape in the flames. Moments later, it split into eight, these clearer. A sword, a mace, a spear. Eight weapons. The smith frowned and stirred the coals fiercely, calling up more images. He needed to be certain of what he saw. In the flames, a woman clad in crystalline armor drew one of the eight, a howling demon sword from its cage of meat, and traded thunderous blows with a stormcast eternal clad in bruise-colored armor. She shattered her opponent's runeblade, and the smith winced to see one of his most potent works so easily destroyed. He waved a hand, conjuring more pictures out of the wavering flames. A bloated pox warrior, one side of his body eaten away and replaced by the thrashing shape of a monstrous kraken, wrapped slimy tendrils about the haft of a great mace, banded in runic iron, and tore it from the hands of a dying ogre. An elf swordsman, eyes hidden beneath a cerulean blindfold, ducked beneath the sweeping bite of an obsidian axe that pulsed with volcanic hunger, and backed away from the hulking auroch who clutched it. Angrily, the smith swept out a hand, summoning more images. They came faster and faster, dancing about his hand like the fragments of a half-remembered dream. He saw wars yet unwaged, and the deaths yet to come, and felt his temper fray. The images moved so fast that even he couldn't keep track of them all. Frustrated, he caught those he could, holding them tight, only for them to slip between his fingers and rejoin the flames. The time had come around at last. He would need to make ready. He ran his white hands through his fiery hair and growled softly,
"Best get to work."
He turned and fixed several of his students with a glare.
"You there, stop skulking and find something to write with. Be quick now."
His students hurried to obey. When they returned, bearing chisels and heavy tomes of stone and iron, he began to speak.
"In the beginning, there was fire, and from fire came heat. From heat, shape. And that shape split into eight. The eight were the raw stuff of chaos, hammered and sculpted to a killing edge by the sworn forge-masters of the dread Soulmaw, the chosen weaponsmiths of Khorne."
He paused a moment before continuing.
"But as the realms shuddered and the Age of Chaos gave way to the Age of Blood, the weapons known as the Eight Lamentations were thought lost."
In the fire, scenes of death and madness played themselves out, over and over again, a cycle without end. Grunni, Lord of all forges and Master Smith, sighed.
"Until now."
Elsewhere, another forge, cruder than Grunni's. A cavern, ripped open and hewn from volcanic stone by the bleeding hands of many slaves. Fire pits and cooling basins occupied the wide, flat floor. Racks decorated the uneven walls, and hack blades, wrath hammers, weapons of all shapes and sizes hung from them in disorganized fashion. At the heart of the forge, within a circle of fire pits, sat a huge anvil. And upon the anvil, a hulking figure leaned, head bowed. Sweat rolled down his muscular arms to splatter with a hiss upon the anvil. His crimson and brass armor was blackened in places, as if it had been exposed to an impossible heat. He inhaled deeply, trying to ignore the weakness that crept through him. He had infused the demon with some of his own strength, in the hopes that it would prove a match for the Lord of all forges, or at least last longer than a handful of moments. He consoled himself with the thought that it was not every man who could match wills with a god and survive.
"Then I am no mere man,"
Volander of Hesfoot murmured to himself.
"I am Forgemaster of Akshi, a warrior smith of Khorne, skull grinder of the Soulmaw."
He had forged weapons without number, as well as the wars in which they were wielded. He had raised up thousands of heroes and cracked the skulls of thousands more. But for the moment, he was simply tired.
"Well?"
The voice, cold and soft, echoed from the shadows of the forge. Volander straightened, skull-faced helm turning towards the speaker who sat in the darkness, wrapped in concealing robes the colour of cooling ashes.
"Kiat of the Folded Soul, Forgemaster of Ulgu, was more smoke than fire, and his shape was seemingly without substance beneath his voluminous attire." "He saw," Volander rumbled, "as I predicted, Kiat."
A second voice, harsh and sharp, like shattering iron, intruded.
"You seek to excuse your own failure, skullcracker."
Volander snorted.
"Excuse? No, I merely explain, Wolant."
He turned, pointing a blunt finger at the second speaker, who stood beyond the glare of the fire pits, his profusion of muscular arms crossed over his massive barrel chest. Wolant Sevenhand, Forgemaster of Shamon, was a brass-skinned, eight-armed abomination, clad in armor of gold. Seven of his arms ended in sinewy, fire-toughened hands. The eighth ended in the blunt shape of a hammer, strapped to a mangled wrist in an effort to correct a long-ago injury.
"If you think you can succeed where I failed, then try your luck by all means,"
Volander continued.
"You dare!"
Wolant growled, reaching for one of the many hammers that hung from his belt. Before he could grab it, Volander snatched up his own from the floor and slammed it down on the anvil, filling the smithy with a hollow, booming echo. Warland staggered, clasping his hands to the side of his head. Volander pointed his hammer at the other skull grinder.
"Remember whose smithy you stand in, Sevenhand. I'll not suffer your bluster here."
"I'm sure our bellicose brother meant no harm, Volander. He is a choleric, self-important creature, as you well know, and prone to rash action."
Kiat unfolded himself and stood. He loomed over the other two skull grinders, a tower of lean, pale muscle, clad in black iron.
"Even so, if he is so rude as to threaten you again, I shall lop off another of his hands."
"My thanks, brother," Volander said.
"Even as I will pluck out your eye if you continue to stare at me so balefully,"
Kiat added mildly. He spread his thin hands.
"Respect costs men like us so little, my brothers. Why be miserly?"
Volander bowed his head.
"Forgive me, brother," he said.
Weak as he was in no shape for a confrontation with a creature as deadly as the folded soul. Volant was bad enough for all that he was a brute. He set the head of his hammer down on the anvil and leaned forwards, bracing himself on the haft.
"Volant is right. I failed. The Master Smith knows, and now he is aware that we know as well."
Volant growled.
"If you had not failed!" "But he did, and so new stratagems must be forged in the fires of adversity."
Kiat pressed his hands together, as if in prayer.
"The crippled god cannot be allowed to take from us that which is ours."
Wollant laughed.
"Ours, folded soul?"
He spread his arms.
"Mine, you mean. Perhaps yours, if I am unlucky, or someone else entirely. For we three are not alone in our quest. Our brother forge-masters begin their own hunts. The eight lamentations call to we who forge them, ready to spill blood once more."
Seven fists shook in a gesture of challenge and defiance.
"Only one of us may earn Khorne's favor by recovering them. Or had you forgotten?"
"None of us have forgotten," Volander said. "We have each chosen our champions and cast them into the realms to seek the eight. But that does not mean we cannot work together against those outside our fraternity."
He shook his head.
"Grunni is not our only foe in this endeavor. Others seek the eight as well. If we do not work together, we will..."
Wallant clapped four of his hands together, interrupting.
"Nonsense! The greater the obstacle, the greater the glory. I came only out of respect for the folded soul's cunning, not to join my fate to yours. My champion will acquire the eight lamentations for me, and the skulls of your servants as well if they get in his way."
He laughed again and turned away. Volander watched him stride towards one of the great archways that lined the cavern wall, and wondered whether he could split the other smith's skull while his back was turned. Kiat chuckled softly, as if reading his thoughts.
"Would that you could crack his thick skull on your anvil, though I would be forced to slay you in turn, brother, should you choose to break the iron oath in such a way."
Volander grunted. The iron oath was the only thing keeping the remaining forge-masters from each other's throats. The truce was a tenuous thing, but it had held for 3 centuries, and he would not be the one to break it. He gestured dismissively.
"It will be more satisfying to snatch victory from him. My champion is most determined." "As is mine,"
Volander nodded.
"Then may the best champion win."
He turned his attentions to the fire pits and gestured, drawing up the cinders and sparks into the air. He stirred the smoke, casting his gaze across the mortal realms, seeking a singular ember of Akshi's fire. When he found it, he cast his words into the fire, knowing that they would be heard.
Ahesian Kel, last of the Ekran, Deathbringer, heed your master's voice.
In a land where the moon burned cold and the dead walked freely, Ahesian Kel heard Volander's voice. Though it was like heated nails digging into his mind, he decided to ignore it. Given the situation, he thought Volander would forgive him. Then again, perhaps not. In any event, it was done, and Ahesian gave it no more thought. Instead, he concentrated on the dead men trying to kill him. Death-rattle warriors, animated skeletons still wearing the tattered remnants of the armor that had failed them in life, emerged from the shadows of the great stone pillars extending to either side of him. They pressed close in the moonlight, crowding the wide stone avenue. Rusted blades dug for his flesh as corroded shields slammed into the ranks of his followers, bowling several of them over. Ahesian gave little thought to the Blood Reaver's plight. The living were a means to an end, and the dead merely one more obstacle between him and that which he sought. Ahead of them, past the ranks of the dead, at the end of the pillar-lined avenue, were the open gates of the mausoleum citadel. Two skeletal giants, carved from stone, knelt to either side of that immense aperture, their skulls bowed over the pommels of their swords. Somewhere, a funerary bell tolled, rousing the dead from their slumber of ages. Deathrattle warriors flooded the avenue. They marched out between the shadowed pillars, or from within the mausoleum citadel, singly and in groups. Not just the dead native to this place, but even those who'd been slain here more recently heeded the tolling of the unseen bell. Though their bones had been picked clean by the jackals and birds that haunted the ruins, he still recognized the sigils that adorned their ruptured armor, the runes of Khorne and Slaanesh, the baleful glyphs of 1,000 lesser gods, all were in evidence among the silent ranks of the enemy. In Shaiish, there was only one certainty, one the gods themselves could not defy. It was a land of endings, where even the strongest would eventually falter. There could be no true victory over that which conquered all. That didn't stop some from trying. But conquest was not Ahesian's goal. Not today. He stood head and shoulders taller than even the tallest of the tribesmen who fought alongside him. His broad frame was hidden beneath razor-edged plates of crimson and brass armor, and the skull visage of his helmet curved upwards, coalescing into the rune of Khorne, clearly marking his allegiances. Heavy chains draped his form, their links decorated with barbs, hooks, and the occasional scalp. He was surrounded by a phalanx of savage tribesmen culled from the lowlands of this region. The heads of their former chieftains slapped against his thigh, their scalps knotted to his belt. If there were a simpler way of making others do what you wished, he hadn't yet found it. The Blood Reavers wore rattletrap armor scavenged from 1,000 killing fields. It was decorated with totems meant to ward off the dead, even as their flesh was painted with ashes and bone dust to make them invisible to ghosts. None of these protections seemed to be working particularly well at the moment. They didn't appear to mind. The bulk of the Blood Reavers fought fiercely to either side of him, hacking and stabbing at the silent dead. Ahesian held the vanguard, as was his right, and pleasure. The Deathbringer surged forwards like the tip of the spear, his gore axe in one hand, skull axe in the other. Both weapons thirsted for something this enemy could not provide, and their frustration pulsed through him. The thorns of metal set into their hafts dug painfully into his palms, opening old wounds, so that his fingers were soon slick with blood. He didn't care. Let them drink, if they would. So long as they served him faithfully and well, it was the least he could do. Blood must be spilled, even if that blood was his own. He chopped down through a shield marked with the face of a leering corpse and splintered the bones huddling beneath. Brute strength was enough to win him some breathing room, but it wouldn't last for long. What the dead claimed, they held with a cold ferocity that awed even some servants of the Blood God. one of the many lessons his time in Shaiish had taught him.
"Onward!"
he snarled, trusting in his voice to carry.
"Corn claim him who first dares to cry hold!"
The blood reavers closest to him gave a shout and redoubled their efforts. He growled in satisfaction and drove his head into the rictus grin of a skeleton, shattering its skull. He swept the twitching remains aside and bawled on, dragging his followers along in his wake. A spear struck his shoulder plate and shivered to fragments, even as he crushed the spine of its wielder. Fallen skeletons groped for his legs, and he trampled them into the dust. Nothing would be allowed to stand between him and his goal. What lay beyond the gateway was his destiny. Khorn had set his feet upon the path, and Ahazian Kel had walked it willingly. For what else could he do? For a Kel, there was only battle. War was, had been, the truest art of the Ekran. Its reasons did not matter. Causes were but distractions to the purity of war waged well. Ahazian Kel, last hero of the Ekran, had sought to become as one with war itself. And so he had given himself up to Khorne. He had offered the blood of his fellow Kells in sacrifice, including that of Prince Cadicus. He cherished that memory above all others, for Cadicus, of all his cousins, had come closest to killing him. Now, here was simply the next step in his journey along the Eightfold Path. He had followed that path from the Fellstone Plains of Akshi to the Ashen Lowlands of Shaiish, and he would not stop now, not until he had claimed his prize. Ahazian let the rhythm of war carry him forwards into the midst of the dead. Slowly but steadily, he carved himself a path towards the gateway. Broken, twitching skeletons littered the ground behind him. His followers shielded him from the worst blows, buying his life with their own. He hoped they found some satisfaction in that. It was an honour to die for one of Khorne's chosen, to grease the wheels of battle with their blood, so that a true warrior could meet his fate in a more suitable fashion. He swept his skull hammer out, smashing a skeleton to flinders, and suddenly found himself clear of the enemy. A few dozen blood reavers, stronger than the rest, or simply faster, stumbled free of the press alongside him. He did not pause, but forged on, running now. The blood reavers followed him, with barely a backwards glance between them. Those who were still locked in combat with the dead would have to fend for themselves. The forecourt of the mausoleum citadel was lit by amethyst will-o'-the-wisps, which swam languidly through the dusty air. By their glow, he could make out strange mosaics on the walls and floor, depicting scenes of war and progress. Statues, weathered by time and neglect, lurked in the corners, their unseeing eyes aimed eternally upwards. Ahazian led his remaining warriors through the silent halls. The blood reavers huddled together, muttering among themselves. In battle, they were courageous beyond all measure. But here, in the dark and quiet, old fears were quick to reassert themselves. Night terrors, whispered of around tribal fires, loomed close in this place. Every shadow seemed to hold a legion of wolf-fanged ghosts, ready to spring and rip the tribesmen apart. Ahazian said nothing to calm them. Fear would keep them alert. Besides, it was not his duty to keep their feet to the Eightfold Path. He was no slaughter priest. If they wished to cower or flee, Khorne would punish them as he saw fit. The sounds of the battle outside had faded into a dim murmur. Shafts of cold light fell from great holes torn in the roof above, and the amethyst wisps swirled thickly about them, lighting the path ahead. Ahazian swept aside curtains of cobwebs with his axe and smashed apart toppled columns and piles of obstructing debris with his hammer, clearing the way. The spirits of the dead clustered thick the deeper they went. Silent phantoms, ragged and barely visible, wandered to and fro. Lost souls following the paths of fading memory. The ghosts displayed no hostility, lost as they were in their own miseries. But their barely intelligible whispers intruded on his thoughts with irritating frequency, and he swiped at them in frustration whenever one got too close. They paid him no mind, which only added to his annoyance. When they at last reached the inner chambers, his temper had frayed considerably, and his followers kept their distance. He found himself hoping for an enemy to appear, an ambush perhaps, anything to soothe his frustrations. The throne room of the mausoleum citadel was a circular chamber, its rounded walls rising to a high dome, shattered in some long-forgotten cataclysm. Shafts of moonlight draped the ruined chamber, illuminating the fallen remains of broken statues and glinting among the thick shrouds of cobwebs and dust that clung to every surface.
"Spread out,"
Ahazian said. His voice boomed, shattering the stillness. His warriors shuffled to obey. He stalked towards the wide dais that occupied the centre of the chamber. It was topped by a massive throne of basalt, and upon the throne a hulking shape sat slumped. Broken skeletons littered the floor around the dais and upon the steps, the scattered bones glowing faintly of witchfire. Ahazian climbed the dais warily. It was almost a given in this realm that a silent corpse was a dangerous one. But the broken form slumped on its throne didn't so much as twitch. The heavy armour was covered so thickly in cobwebs that its crimson hue, as well as the bat-winged skulls that decorated it, were all but invisible. As he drew closer, he felt a touch of awe at the sheer size of the deceased potentate. The being had been massive, as was the great black-bladed axe that hung loosely from one fleshless hand, its edge resting on the ground. The corpse wore a heavy, horned helm, topped by a frayed crest. He scraped away some of the cobwebs with the edge of his axe, revealing a long, gaping rent in the filthy chest plate, as if some wide, impossibly sharp blade had passed through the metal and into whatever passed for the dead man's heart.
"Huh," Ahazian murmured, pleased.
At last, he'd found it. He buried his gore-axe in the armrest of the throne and thrust his hand into the wound. Spiders spilled out, crawling up his arm or tumbling to the floor. He ignored the panicked arachnids and continued to root through the mouldering chest cavity, until his fingers at last closed on that which he'd fought so long to find. He ripped the sliver of black steel free of the husk, and there was a sound halfway between a moan and a sigh. He held his prize up to the dim light, a splinter torn free in the death strike. It was a fragment from a weapon, and not just any weapon, but one forged in the shadow fires of Ulgu. One of Eight. That was an excerpt from Eight Lamentations, Spear of Shadows by Josh Reynolds, read by John Banks. That was Hammerhull and Other Stories, read by John Banks and Jonathan Keeble. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2017.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.